flurries of fun await this winter in Indiana. Feel the rush of the Midwest's only refrigerated toboggan run. Ski down snow-covered slopes and marvel at frozen waterfalls on a winter hike. When it's time to unwind, from outdoor fun to indoor escapes, your perfect winter getaway starts in Indiana. Plan your trip today at inindiana.com/winter.
But dude averages 18 yards after catch.
We get it. When you're passionate about something, you go all in. You live entirely in that world. That's exactly how Graybar is about renewable energy projects.
He's all fourth quarter, such a sleeper.
Join our league of clean energy at graybar.com. Yep, Graybar does that.
Whether you want to
buy, buy, buy
in a bear market or
sell, sell, sell
in a bull market, Jim Cramer can help you become a better investor. Mad Money, weeknights 6 Eastern. Listen to CNBC on the Odyssey app.
What's up? What's happening? Welcome in. It's the Hoffman Show. We're on the Team 980. We're always live as well on the free Odyssey app, streaming live on YouTube at the Team 980. And we are locked and loaded, not just today, but for the rest of the week. Today's guest list is jammed. Robert Mays in 25 minutes at 4:30 from the Athletic Football Show. Scott Pioli, the Super Bowl winning executive now with the NFL Network, joins us at 6:30, and the one and only 8 to 9 Santana Moss with us coming up at 5 p.m. today. But it's Competition Wednesday, and that means we start with Dan Quinn and Jaden Daniels talking to the press today. And I think one of the real big stories from last week was how Dan kind of shaped the week and shaped the narrative. And we, you know, have referenced this for as long as they keep playing this season and probably long beyond. But that story that Mitch Tischler told us last week about how they had the sign in the locker room that said they've got to go through us, that it wasn't this house money, we're the underdogs mentality against Detroit. It was, we belong here. We're going to go show everybody that we belong here, and they've got to deal with us, not we're lucky to be here, and let's see what we can do. And so Dan Quinn was asked today if he is taking the underdog mentality into this week, and I'll give you one guess on how that went.
We just don't let the outside narrative kind of drive it, and internally, we've got a lot of expectations about how we can play and what we do, but we never, you know, went too far outside of things. Did we feel dismissed or put off? Yeah, of course some. I think that happened in the opening game. I felt dismissive. Hey, man, hang in there. It's going to be a long time. I was like, hey, F you. You know, like, that's not how it's going to go down. And I was upset, but it wasn't disrespect. It was dismissiveness. And I felt some kind of way, but it didn't motivate me more to say, that's how they think of us. It wasn't disrespect. It was, we're going to be a lot better than what we just showed today. And eventually we'll show that. So it's not a prove it to everybody else or underdog story. It's, you know, it's how we get down. This is not a 7-game series. And so, like, we got to play our best on Sunday at 3 o'clock. And that to me is the biggest factor.
And Dan has done an incredible job of that this year, because I think realistically, maybe he'll talk about this after the season. Maybe he'll just always say exactly what he just did. But there was probably a good amount of patience that was to be expected from the front office and ownership going into the season, because why would you have these expectations? It's year one. Hey, we want to do this the right way. That's not, you know, always conducive to winning immediately when you tear something down to the extent that they tore it down. Although I guess what they tore down was terrible. So, you know, that's probably a relevant factor. But to build it, to build into something that puts you at one of the NFL's Final Four, there's teams that take years to get here. I mean, Detroit got to this point last year and lost, but it took them multiple years to get there. And then they were better suited this year. They just ran into the wrong team. You know, teams like Philly, teams like Kansas City have been working to get back here, stay here, in Kansas City's case, forever. Buffalo's been working to get back. They had to remake their team around Josh Allen, because even if you have the one piece, the competition is so stiff to get to this point, it's really hard. So the idea that they can just do it in year one, it was far-fetched. And as someone who, you know, we went back to our first and 10 after the Tampa, or before the Tampa game, to say, hey, what's still relevant? And my first thing was like, hey, this team is going to require patience, because it's going to play a lot better than they did today, but that might not always be good enough to win. And it turns out they figured out pretty quickly how to not only play better than they did in that opener in Tampa, where they didn't play remotely up to their standard, but that their standard with the talent that they have is good enough to win. And as we've talked about this week, they've improved the talent that they have with how they use them schematically, how they've developed players, and it's all just tremendously impressive. And that leads us to this weekend and a showdown against the Philadelphia Eagles in the division. And if we could go cut five actually here, one of the fascinating things to me this week, and you'll hear this in my conversation with Robert, we actually taped earlier this morning, but in many ways this game is really simple. Like it seems on paper like it's just a matter of who can do the things that we obviously know both sides need to do. Like Philly can't give up big plays to Jaden on the ground and or through the air. And Washington can't give up big plays to Saquon. And it kind of seems like the game is in many ways that straightforward. So for Dan, as the person who's at the helm of trying to find a competitive edge, how do you find a competitive edge in game three? Because he just said it's not a seven-game series. But this is a three-game series, if you will. Just we're down to game three.
Yeah, I think the natural narrative, you know them and they know you, and I don't really think of it that way. You start right back at it. You know, what are fresh eyes on the games? What are fresh eyes on the times from when we played it? The easy narrative would be, hey, they know us, we know them, but it's different than that to me. This is our first time playing them in the postseason. Game one, what needs to be different? What could be the same? You know, what do we need to start doing? What do we need to stop doing? Same thing in the second game. And so as you get into the third matchup with somebody, you want to make sure you have fresh eyes for the first two. Hey, did I miss something? And was there something there that I didn't, you know, think we had or did? And both teams will have things on their call sheets that never got called in that game. And you do have those up still that you've been practicing. And sometimes every play on your call sheet doesn't make it into the game, and you keep those alive as well.
So there's a schematic element there. There's obviously a personnel element too. Like you're now studying these guys for the third time. Can you find another tick? Can you find something? Obviously, you know, from game one to game two, Washington changed some things with their offense in terms of moving Terry around a lot more. Noah Brown to De'Ami Brown is a big change in terms of the routes run and the play style and all that kind of stuff for the offense. So there's plenty to consider. Jamison Crowder obviously had a big day, including the game-winning touchdown in the second one. I don't think he even played in that first matchup. So what kind of role can he have this weekend? On the other side, Nick Sirianni's trying to figure that out. And Sirianni's an interesting coach. Guy with an offensive background who definitely had his hands in the offense a lot last year, I think much to the chagrin of a lot of pundits. And this year, I mean, he certainly has his hands in some. He's allowed to. He's the head coach. But what has Dan learned over the years from facing Sirianni? And what is he expecting and kind of his head coaching matchup this weekend?
Yeah, I wouldn't say, you know, because going against their team over the last few years, you know, they're aggressive. The four down football style is similar to ours in terms of being bold and aggressive. They play tough, you know, but there's not one marker that stands out to me more than another, other than much like last week, both teams, you know, be ready to defend all four downs because both teams not only are willing, you know, they're both excellent at it.
I would be so curious to ask Sirianni the same question about Quinn and see if you get a similar answer, or do you get something much more distinct of they play fast, they play hard, they play physical? Because Philly does bully teams a little bit. Like Philly's really physical. They definitely have an attitude to them. I think especially on defense, and Jalen Carter's kind of the leader of that. I think they probably were a little nastier when Jason Kelce was there, even though Cam Jurgens has done a really good job at center, and he himself. It's just like you lost a leadership piece, and so what does that look like? And I think that one of the things that's going to be interesting this weekend is Sirianni is uber-aggressive. Like, can you take advantage of that? Can you get stops on fourth down? Can you steal possessions that way? And if you can, and then take advantage of it the other way, like, that's enormous. Can you get good field position because he goes for it at midfield and doesn't get it? So these key situations are huge, and it's also going to depend on the health of Jalen Hurts, right? We know he's going to play, but how healthy is he? That ankle, knee, whether it's high ankle sprain, knee sprain, whatever it was that got rolled up on last weekend, I think it's going to be really interesting to watch the tush-push situation. But I would also say this. Washington did a really good job against Detroit of not having to deal with fourth down. You play differently. You're a little more aggressive. Can you get pressures? And they also made plays. I mean, on the third and one where Dorrance Armstrong forces the fumble, the only reason Detroit probably doesn't run it there and you just get a sure first down is because they're probably going to try to take a shot and go for it on fourth down or get a chunk at least. And they got Amon-Ra St. Brown isolated on Bobby Wagner. He just tripped. And then Dorrance made a play while Goff had to hitch. And if you can make plays like that on Jalen Hurts, who does hold the football, is susceptible to turnovers in the pocket, as we saw in the first matchup. I believe he had a fumble. I might be thinking of a different game. I've watched so much Philly at this point that it's hard to keep all the details straight. But that is something that has happened. And that is something that he will do. And so that is something to watch for sure this weekend. Washington, part of the reason they're here is they played clean. They haven't turned the football over. They have done a good job largely of avoiding penalties. And if they can do that this weekend, then they absolutely give themselves a chance. Up next, more from DQ, including what his plans are for the offensive line with Sam Cosmi out. And we'll continue to hear from Jaden Daniels and more throughout the day. Robert Mays coming up at 4:30 here on the Team 980. Robert Mays, host of the Athletic Football Show, with us coming up in about 10 minutes, actually about 12, top of the hour. That's 5 p.m. Santana Moss. 6:30 tonight, Scott Pioli will join us, the former NFL executive, now with the NFL Network. Right now, though, let's let you hear from Jaden Daniels a little bit, and then from Dan Quinn on the guys who are tasked with protecting him as they prepare for the NFC Championship game. And Jaden was asked, very simply, as a rookie, what does it mean to play in this point, or in this game, at this point in the season?
I just think for me, football is just it's fun, and like I said, it's like a safe haven for me. Everything I've been through personally in my life. So, you know, I'm not really going out there and stressing about the moment, because at the end of the day, I get to do what I love each and every week, you know, win, lose, or draw. So it's just a blessing to be one of those kids that are able to fulfill their dream and live out their dream of playing on Sundays in the NFL.
And in case you're like, what has Jaden gone through? Not that you're doubting it, you're just unfamiliar with the story. I would highly suggest anyone who's a fan of Jaden watching The Money Game, which is on Amazon Prime. It's a documentary series that followed a bunch of LSU athletes, including Jaden, but also Angel Reese and Livy Dunn and some others that it was Jaden's, yeah, it was his final year at LSU last year. And talked about NIL stuff, and just you get to learn a little bit more about him, about the relationship with his mom, and so much more. But specifically to what he's been through, like, this is someone who lost both of his grandparents, who he was very, very close with, to COVID within quick succession of each other. And that really was like a turning, I don't want to say a turning point, but a changing point, a significant point in his life. And, you know, it's something that he thinks about and, you know, we'll talk about when asked about. And, you know, for him to be able to do this just a couple years later, because at that time he was still at Arizona State. Think of all the different changes in his life since then. Pretty cool for him to have that perspective and for that perspective to be helping him. The shots of him on the sideline are a joke. Like, no one's supposed to be that calm. Nevertheless, the starting quarterback, who's a rookie, and these shots of him just chilling, it's pretty remarkable stuff. As for the guys who want to keep him upright and chilling, Dan Quinn asked about the offensive line today with Sam Cosmi out. So they've got decisions to make. How do they move it around? And, you know, one thing that you'll hear about offensive line is just get your best five out there. And I don't know that that's entirely true. I'm curious to hear DQ's answer in a second, because he was asked directly that. But, you know, they still have to play positions. They still have to play together. But could you, I don't know, put Cornelius Lucas at right tackle, kick Andrew Wiley into guard, something like that? Is that on the table? Here's DQ answering that question today.
Yeah, a lot of thought to that, David. And first, let's give a quick shout out to Trent of coming in and really being somebody that can handle that. But yes, that is absolutely, you know, how we go about it. And that would be there at any spot. Like what I was saying earlier, like, what's the best thing for us to win this game? And then that is all there is. And so, that's really where we're at in terms of the next 3 days of our practice.
So that's going to be interesting, because it sounds like it's not off the table. And Wiley as a right guard, I think, would be pretty good. And you can run a lot of the stuff that you run with Sam Cosmi. And Cosmi, it's more unique because of his mobility and his strength and his power. And he's certainly a better guard than Andrew Wiley will be. But, like, Wiley has a lot of mobility, and he can get out there and do some things. And so, you know, do you want Trent Scott, who's also got some good mobility but doesn't quite have the power, do you want him in there? Or do you want to kick Wiley inside and then put Cornelius Lucas, who's probably a better player than Trent Scott, outside? I mean, I think it's hard because, like, Trent Scott played pretty well at right guard. Now, that doesn't mean it's the playoffs. Like, you do what's best for the team, and there is no finagling. There is no, like, this guy earned it. There's no such thing as earning it. There is just, hey, you earned it because he's the best guy, and that's our best option. And I think it's also interesting that Trent Scott was the guy who went in instead of Michael Dieter as the backup there, where Dieter was thought to be the backup swing lineman. So you have some options. I don't know what they'll ultimately do. I mean, I guess I don't know. I guess you probably keep Wiley on that right side and would put him at guard, and you move as few pieces as possible, because, like, I think Wiley's experience at guard might be on the left. So do you kick Allegretti over to the, like, you start playing this very silly game that I don't want to say it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter for me to list out all the possible combinations. It matters for Dan and Bobby Johnson and Cliff Kingsbury and Anthony Lynn to decide which one is actually best for them. And it sounds like they've got multiple options on the table. There's also a team that's rotated at times this year. And I think that is, you know, potentially on the table as well. Could they give some different looks to the Eagles, give some different looks to Jalen Carter, especially considering you are kind of dealing with the spot, that right guard spot, where Jalen Carter often is lined up off the shoulder of that player. On the outside, Brandon Coleman has just solidified himself as the starting left tackle for this team, certainly now and probably on into the future. Of course, the rotation piece started with him and Cornelius Lucas doing that. So what has Dan Quinn seen from Brandon Coleman this year in terms of his growth, development, and just kind of who he is?
Yeah, I thought just a lot of resilience early, battled through some of the injuries. If you go way back, came even to training camp, and is he going to be ready, and will he be there, and battling, you know, some with Big Luke into the spots. But I think the resilience is the stuff that has impressed me the most as a first-year player battling through it. And he's grown a lot into that, knowing, like, I can play with that. Much like a baseball pitcher, you may not know he doesn't have his A game, but he was able to really go and deliver. And that's a good trait to have for any pro player in almost any sport where they have to play through those, and he's really done a good job on that. Now that he's back and healthy, that's a big deal.
For sure is, and he played a lot better last week. Had a tough one against Tampa, but played well against Detroit, and we'll see what he can do against Philly. His third time seeing this group, and you know, I actually this morning went back and watched every explosive run that the Eagles have given up this year. It didn't take that long because it's only 45. Anthony, get this too. You ready for this? The Eagles only gave up 45 explosive runs this year, which I'm counting for this purpose as 10 plus yards, which is how I can sort it on NFL Pros film. And three of the 45 over 18 regular season games, or 18 regular season weeks, 17 games, were on the first series against Green Bay.
Oh, wow.
They gave up two to the running backs, and then Green Bay scored on the opening series on a reverse by Jaden Reed. I was like a 33-yarder, as long as I'm remembering and reading the timestamp correctly. But I was like, dang, we're still at like 12-something in the first quarter down there in Brazil. And sure enough, they didn't give up that many more. They gave up a couple more to the Packers, a couple more here. And you get to one game, and then it'd be another team. And you're like, oh, okay, they gave up one the entire game. The Commanders' first game against them was one of those. They gave up, I think it was a 14-yarder to Brian Robinson. That was it. The running backs had zero in the second game. It was just Jaden Daniels scrambles. Now, they were in pretty big spots, including the scramble late where Jaden juked Jalen Carter out of his shoes, and the 4th-and-11 where he juked the entire team out of their shoes for a 29-yard gain. But getting the explosive runs in the way that Washington did last week against Detroit is definitely going to be a lot harder against this Philly group. But there's a decent amount of them that come over Josh Sweat because he's really aggressive as a pass rusher. So, one, he's lighter and you can move him a little bit. And two, especially if he's like in pass rush mode and he's not expecting it. And two, there's sometimes he just gets upfield and you can just pop, 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 move him out of the way. And now instead of having to block him, you've just removed him from the hole. And that's obviously tremendously helpful. So, you know, there's your first scouting report of the week from this chair. And that's what people are here for.
Yeah, I'm ready for it, man.
Did it. They want the nuts. They want the bolts. You know who's really good at the nuts and bolts of the X's and O's in the football? It works better on radio, Anthony, if you say something as opposed to just raising your eyebrow. The YouTube stream appreciates your facial expressions, but it does work better if in the audio format.
Who are you talking about?
Robert Mace from The Athletic Football Show. He's going to join us next here on the Team 980. It's the Hoffman Show. We're on the Team 980. We're always live as well on the free Odyssey app. Reminder that on Friday at this time, we'll be talking to Ian Eagle, the Westwood One play-by-play announcer. Of course, you know him from the NFL on CBS and the NBA on TNT as well. You know him because he's Ian freaking Eagle. Ian's going to be on the show on Friday. He's calling the game on Sunday for Westwood One. You can hear that broadcast right here on the Team 980. Super, super pumped to be able to bring you the NFC Championship game featuring your Washington Commanders and the Philadelphia Eagles coming up on Sunday. Other things to note, about a half hour from right now, Santana Moss with us live here on the Team 980. 2 hours from now, Scott Pioli, NFL executive. If you can't stick around to listen, you're going to want to definitely hit that one on the podcast. So make sure you subscribe to the Hoffman Show podcast wherever it is that you get yours. And we got a bunch of other good stuff lined up for later in the week as well. I do believe that Kevin Burkhardt is going to join us tomorrow. So pretty pumped about that. He's calling the game for Fox. Obviously called the Detroit game this weekend where the Commanders won. So Burkhardt, Ian, Scott, that's just getting started. We have a couple other big ones, including some big blasts from the past that might be joining us later in the week as well. But right now, it's my pleasure to share with you a conversation I had a little bit earlier today with one of my great friends in the business. Robert Mace is the host of the Athletic Football Show, and here was our chat about just how awesome what the Commanders are doing is. Joining me now, the host of the Athletic Football Show, Robert Mace. Think he's one of the best talking about the sport, and it's great to have him back on the show. Robert, good to see you, my friend. How are you?
Good to see you too. I'm doing
excellent.
Well.
Excellent. Love that. You got in your town for your team. You got Ben Johnson now being the head coach for the Bears. Unfortunately, I brought you here to talk about his last game, which, you know, his team did score 31 points despite five turnovers, which is not nothing. But I still am just in shock. I think so many of us here in DC are in shock at how this Commanders team has pulled this together, how thorough and dominant the performance was. And so we're going to talk about that and then look ahead to the Eagles. But when you look at that Lions game and specifically what they were able to do to that Lions offense, I think one of the things that almost gets underrated is how well the defense played, that Johnson felt like he had to keep going back to that trick play bag, the bend but don't break style, and then their ability to create turnovers at a rate that they hadn't all year. What did you see from that side of the ball before we get to the thing that everyone's talking about, which is Jaden Daniels?
Well, I think that for the most part, like, the Lions did what they wanted to do offensively for most of that game. I think that's worth mentioning. Like, the trick play thing, you're down 10 because you've turned the ball over a little bit. You probably don't need to do it in that moment, but I didn't come away from that being like the Lions did something wrong offensively. Jared Goff makes multiple mistakes in that game. Like, the strip sack happens at what, the 30, 25 yard line. You're driving. The first interception he throws, like, that's just a decision that the quarterback makes, right? Like, the underneath option is open in cover two there. You just have to check the ball down. And the throw to that was intercepted by Mike Usain is still like, that's the right read. Like, that play is open if you lay that out into the end zone a little bit more. Like, that's a post against quarters where the safety is like clamping down. Like, all of that stuff is the mistakes that could have been avoided if the quarterback makes a slightly different decision. I think Jared Goff has been very good this season. I think Jared Goff has been very good for the Lions, but it was not the best game for Jared Goff. The two things that I would point out, I think, for Washington's defense specifically, probably three things. One, like, that's a great play by Mike Usain still. And like, what he has done for them this year has been, he's been excellent. And that's part of a larger conversation about how good of a job this front office did in assembling this roster this offseason. Two, the run defense in the second half was so much better than it was in the first half. I mean, if you look at it, they were averaging like 9 yards carry in the first half. In the second half, it was just, they looked like a human run rushing offense. It was like 40%, 45% success rate, like 4 yards a carry. Like, they really did clamp down in the second half in that regard. And I think that you saw glimpses of what the front can be, right? And like, going into it, we always knew that this was going to be the strength of this team defensively from a roster perspective. And you get Jonathan Allen back. I thought that Teron Payne had some really nice moments. I've always thought Dorrance Armstrong was a really solid player. Dante Fowler for what he's given them and what he's getting paid is an absolute monster home run. So that to me is what I would kind of zero in on, is that the front in the right moments had, in the front in the biggest parts of that game had its moments in a way that it needed to.
Yeah, and that's kind of been a theme for them where they've given up some big stuff early. Unfortunately, sometimes it's been reversed. They played really well for like three quarters in some games, and then that they just fall apart at the end. Putting together a full 60 minutes defensively has been kind of a challenge this year, but that's kind of what they did against Philadelphia as well in that second matchup. Obviously, Jalen goes out, but you know, when you look at teams and how they make adjustments around the league, how would you rank how Washington is performing on that side of the ball, of their ability to find a tweak or find an answer within a game?
It's impressive, and I think it speaks to how this team is constructed right now, where you don't need to be great defensively for four quarters. You're not going to be, right? Like, this is a unit that was pieced together mostly through mid-tier free agents. It's a unit that was very much a rebuilding side of the ball for a rebuilding team. It's about, can we bow up a little bit? Can we get a couple high variance moments like a turnover? And can the offense carry us? And I think that if you can stumble into four or five of those a game, and you can find a couple important adjustments that gives you a puncher's chance on that side, I think that's what's really important. And over the last few weeks, they've absolutely been able to do that. It helped that the Bucks shot themselves in the foot in multiple different times, and it helps that the Lions did that as well. But if your offense is avoiding mistakes and you can coax the other offense into making a couple, that's a worthwhile formula for a team playing as well as this one is on offense.
Robert Mays, the Athletic Football Show, with us here on the Hoffman Show, Team 980, always live as well on the free Odyssey app. All right, let's talk about what everyone's talking about, Jaden and what he's doing offensively. And we can talk about the offensive structure, and I know there's some things that you really like about what Cliff's doing in a second. What he did with the run game in this game was very, very impressive. But to the point you just made, Jaden not turning the football over on top of the high level stuff that he's doing. Like, are you comfortable saying this is the best rookie season ever for a quarterback? Or, you know, are we at that point? Is it almost inarguable, or are there other people that you'd say, like, we've kind of seen this before, but the team success obviously is at a different level?
I mean, I wouldn't be comfortable talking about it like before I started covering the league, just because I wasn't looking at it that way. I don't, like, you go back, I don't know what Dan Marino's rookie season looked like, stuff like that. But since I started doing this like 15 years ago, I think it's kind of inarguable. You know, like, Andrew Luck was very good in tough circumstances as a rookie. Justin Herbert was excellent in fairly tough circumstances as a rookie. But when you combine what he did in the regular season with what he's done in the postseason, it doesn't really seem like a conversation. Like, I think this is the best we've ever seen a rookie quarterback play, especially when you consider some of the high stakes moments he's had to be a part of.
Is there a moment for you where things, like, the conversation about him shifted, where it went from like, this is amazing for a rookie, to like, oh, this is just top five quarterback play, and this is what we should expect from him week in and week out?
I don't know what that would look like. We did a show on our podcast probably midway through the season with me and JT O'Sullivan, and we were talking about all the rookie quarterbacks. And as part of that discussion, I was already in, like, by that point in the year. I said to JT on that show, you can go look it up, I think that there is a better chance he wins an MVP award than he becomes like a below average quarterback in the NFL over the next 10 years. And it was mostly rooted in just how quickly things were happening and how assertive he was in making those things happen quickly, how fast he was seeing stuff. It's remarkable. And I still feel that way. You know, like, when you watch him, you know, get backside to things, or how quickly he's the thing we've talked about a lot, he is so good at finding voids in coverage. Yep. And I think that there are two different areas where that manifests the most. One is when you're applying to zone coverage against him, he's going to find space. And I think the offense has been structured to allow him to do that. Like, the rate at which he consistently finds completions is incredible. And then the other side of that is when you blitz him, that also creates voids in coverage. And that's why I was so surprised that the Lions approached things the way that they did. If I were playing against Washington right now, I'm playing man coverage, and I'm trying to have some sort of like hug rush or spy. I'm not sending extra bodies at the quarterback. It could be tempting because he's a young player, but when teams have done that against him, especially when it's been, they played zone behind those, he's just sliced and diced it way too much. I think you have to make the receiving talent on this team beat you. I would not let Jaden Daniels beat me. And I understand if you're Detroit, you got zero pressures when you brought four in that game, and you didn't feel like you could play the game that way. But if you go back and look and you look at the numbers, when they rushed four and played man, Washington's offense wasn't good. And so that's why I think Philly is just a different beast, because they don't have to bring pressure and they don't want to, and they are capable of playing man against teams that warrant it. And I wouldn't be surprised if they leaned into that. So I think that those two areas where finding voids in zone coverage and just really being able to hurt you when you blitz him, those are two things for a young quarterback that I think show a real refined approach to the position that is notable.
So the numbers don't lie. Like, you're 100% correct, obviously, on the idea of, or what, I guess not even the idea, what happened in the Lions game, what's happened in other games this year. But if I'm a defensive coordinator, or if I'm a head coach and my defensive coordinator comes to me and is like, hey, we're not going to get any pressure, we're going to play man and let that guy sit back there forever, I'm going to be like, then he's eventually going to find something and murder us. So is that actually the best plan? Or is it only a plan that can work if you are Philly, which I guess is the only thing that matters at this point this weekend? A team like Pittsburgh did that and did that very, very well against them, because that's how they rush. They rush very well as a unit and can actually keep him in the pocket. But for most teams, is that even a viable option moving forward, you know, for the rest of his career?
Depends on the teams you're playing against, right? I mean, I think that there are going to be, when you get into this point in the season, there are probably going to be teams that can do that against you. And it's, to me, it's not even about rushing four. You can rush five, but when you start doing more than that, like, I think against him, I don't necessarily know if you need like a middle of the field zone defender, right? Like, if you're playing cover one and one of your off-ball linebackers is that like rat player in the middle of the field, I would rather have that guy hug, rush, or play like some sort of de facto spy near the line of scrimmage. If you look back at what the Bills were doing to the Ravens, right? And you watch what Milano was doing consistently, where he'd be in sort of that left A-gap, B-gap area. They were actually bringing three when he was doing this, but he would sit there and be ready to spill over the top if the quarterback were to scramble. Like, that's what I would be doing if I were playing against Washington. The way this changes is if they get better receivers, it becomes less of a viable option for the defenses playing against them. And over the next couple of years, when they have endless resources, you would assume they do this. But right now, I think that's the way that I would approach this team, because, again, I just wouldn't let him beat me. I also think there's a misnomer that when you play man, quarterbacks scramble against you at a higher rate and scrambles are more effective. And I have to assume that's part of this, is the teams look at what he's done as a scrambler and they say, we can't let him do that to us. Well, if you look at the numbers, it's actually not true. Like, teams that get scrambled on a lot are teams that have bad or incomplete pass rushes, where quarterbacks can have time or they can find alleys to escape. So again, I would rather go down swinging, making the receivers on this team beat me, than letting Jaden Daniels sit there and pick me apart if I were playing zone coverage.
Robert Mays, the Athletic Football Show, with us here on the Team 980. When you look at the big picture here, and we'll get back to the Eagles game in a second, but talk about the front office, and you're someone who, you know, pays attention to like assistant coaches and what they're doing. You know, a lot of people around the league and the lower levels of front office. They kind of have a great understanding of how this stuff works and how it's built. How Washington has flushed out their front office, not just with Adam Peters at the top, but some of the pieces that they brought in underneath. How impressed are you, or how rare is it to be able to do this, period, nevertheless, in 1 year like they have?
It's very impressive. I mean, it's... I'm sure your listeners will hate me for saying this. We like to do this every year when a team has success that we didn't necessarily expect. And like, everything they do is great, and the line is going to go up and up and up for the rest of time. And that's never how this stuff works.
Of course.
And I think that when you look at what Washington did this offseason, everything they did, all of these moves are, you know, they're not coin flips. You probably have a better percentage chance than that, but there's a percentage chance of them hitting. You could look at everything Washington did this offseason and make an argument that the 50-50 chance or the 70-30 chance, whatever, came up in their favor every single time with every single move that they made. Like, you could go through the free agent signings, like Biotish, Allegretti, what Austin Ekeler has been for them, the plan they had for Brandon Coleman at left tackle, what Frankie Louvu has been, Dorrance Armstrong, Dante Fowler making $1 million, Jeremy Chinn being a really good version of himself, Bobby Wagner having the season he's having at his age. Like, everything they did came up the way that you want it to come up. And you hope that will be the case moving forward. And when you have off seasons like that, it, I think, creates ingrained confidence in the people making those decisions. And so I think that's what the type of team you want to become is the type of team that deserves the benefit of the doubt based on the series of decisions that you've made. And based on what Adam Peters and that front office did this year, I think that Washington is on the road to being that sort of team.
I think that I would say two things in response to that. One, you know, I hope that you're right, because they were so intentional with the things that they did. They brought in guys with specific roles in mind, and it's like, we're not just going to bring in these guys, throw them together, and hope that it works. It's like, we're targeting this guy because he does X. We're going to ask him to do X, and those guys have then gone out and done X, and that changes from a coin flip to the 70-30 or the 80-20 or whatever it is. And I think the irony is the things that didn't work out for this team, to the extent that some things haven't worked out for this team, are the moves they didn't make. It was the bets on some of the guys that were here that they then realized pretty quickly were like, oh, whoops, that's not going to work. Because they had to make some decisions, right? They couldn't go 50 new guys. They went 30 new guys, which was still the most in the league. But they were like, all right, let's give Emmanuel Forbes a shot. Let's give Jahan Dotson a shot. And those are the two big ones where it's like wide receiver two until Deami Brown's had two great games here. Everyone's like, well, what's the answer there? And then they had to go make the Lattimore trade because Forbes didn't work out. And so the irony is that to the extent that there was questions about what they did, it was the moves they didn't make versus the moves that they did.
Yeah, and I think that that's the benefit of bringing in new leadership, is that Adam Peters has no obligation to make Emmanuel Forbes work. It doesn't matter that they spent a first-round pick on him. This is sunk cost, man. There's nothing about that that should tie you to him as you're thinking about future decisions. And I think the clarity that comes along with new leadership sometimes can be beneficial. You're not going to keep throwing, you know, good money after bad. You're going to try to move on when it's time to move on. And I think that they've absolutely done that.
Robert Mays, Athletic Football Show, with us for another few minutes here on the Team 980. I love the way that you guys organize your preview pod. So I'm gonna throw that format back at you real quick. We can do a condensed radio version, and then folks can tune in to you and Derek for the long podcast version. But when Washington has the ball, what's the most interesting thing for you in the NFC Championship game?
What they're going to do on the back end, and like how they're going to challenge him and how they're going to make it hard for him. You can't make it easy on him. He's already too good, and he already makes too good of decisions for you to consistently be putting him in a position to succeed. I think that when we think about young quarterbacks, the idea of bothering them in the pocket is paramount for a lot of defensive coordinators, right? Like, I want to make him feel uncomfortable. That is different for everybody, right? Like, I think with Lamar, what the Bills did to him, where it's like, we're going to blitz a lot, we're going to make him play faster than he wants to, that's okay. I would rather make Jaden Daniels play slower than he wants to. And so I think you have to tailor your game plan and your approach based around the quarterback that you're playing. They aren't just young quarterbacks, right? They aren't just scrambling quarterbacks. He is his own unique bundle of traits. And I think that you have to think about him that way. I want him sitting there in the pocket longer than he wants to be there, because sometimes that leads to him taking sacks. And I think that, to me, would be how I would try to go after him if I were Vic Fangio. And I think that for Vic specifically, that's how he wants to play. They're not going to send a lot of pressure. I think that that's Washington. The Eagles defense overall, I think, has the capacity to give him a hard time, even if we've seen him have success against them at some points this year. So that's what I would say on that side of the ball. On the other side of the ball, like, it's very simple. Like, can you stop them from rushing for 250 yards? Like, right. The game isn't that interesting. Like, it's interesting in terms of the stakes and the personalities and the stakeholders and the storylines. I'm very excited for it. But as far as the nuts and bolts go, I think that the most important aspects on both sides of the ball, I haven't even started doing my prep for it yet. It's very easy to land on both of those things.
No doubt about it. And that was kind of the key in the matchups earlier this season. Washington did a good job of stopping Philly the first time around until they didn't, which is kind of what happens with Saquon Barkley. And then they reversed it in the second game. And obviously Hurts gets hurt And they're able to come back in part because Philly can't run the football anymore. And so in many ways, it is that obvious. The doing it is the much harder part than the prediction on that side of it. Robert Mays, you can check out the Athletic Football Show wherever you get your podcast. He and Derek Klassen, multiple times a week. Great stuff always. Robert, appreciate your time here on the radio, my friend.
Absolutely. Talk to you soon.
Again, that's Robert Mays, everybody. A little bit of breaking news as we were talking. Bengals have a new defensive coordinator. They are going to hire or have hired Al Golden, who was last the defensive coordinator at Notre Dame. So he makes his way down to Cincinnati from South Bend. That, according to Tom Pelissero and Ian Rappaport and Mike Garofolo, of the NFL Network. So you got that on the breaking news front. Other than that, we keep on rolling next. We actually need to switch some things around from a timing standpoint. Santana got caught up doing his day job of talking about the Commanders on television, and he's still in studio. So we're going to bump him back. He's nice enough to continue to come on with us, even though he's having a longer day than anticipated. Santana coming up at 5:30. And we'll get you one of his colleagues next. A little bit more from Logan, take command style, on how the Commanders' defense had both a good day and a bad day simultaneously against the Lions, and what they need to do to clean things up against the Eagles. That's next on the Hoffman Show.